This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. A lot of county jails in Indiana are overcrowded. The reasons for this are complicated. And for years, there's been debate about why it's happening and what to do about it. A state task force was formed to study the issue, and they've released a report about what they found. Today, we'll talk to members of that task force. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. And leave a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it in front of our panel for the conversation. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me in the studio now is Stephen David, Indiana Supreme Court Justice and Chair of the Jail Overcrowding Task Force. Thanks for taking the time, Justice David.
Pleasure to be here.
Indiana State Representative Greg Storwald is here as well. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
And another state representative, Randy Fry, is also here. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
We'll start with you, Representative Fry. How did the Jail Overcrowding Task Force get formed?
Well, it came from a bill that I worked on last year with Justice David, Chief Justice Rush, Representative Storwald, and it began in Jennings County, where I represent. The jail was overcrowded, and we had a lot of different opinions about why. And so it occurred to me, and has for a good time now, that building a larger jail is in part treating a symptom. But we never got to the real root problem. And then when we started looking for the root problem, we realized we didn't even have data that proved it or showed it. And so I created the Jail Overcrowding Task Force with the help of these gentlemen and others with the hope that we could study the issue in depth, and we did, and find out some really deep, meaningful information that we could then come back this year and in future years and draft legislation that would begin to address the root cause of jail overcrowding.
And we have two members of the task force here with us right now, Representative Storwald and Justice David. But who else is on the task force, and how did you come to select who was on it?
Oh, the task force was very diverse. We had prosecutors. We had local elected officials. We had public defenders, legislators, members of the judiciary. And the reason we selected them is we wanted a very wide view of this issue. And I think it worked really well, and I'm very proud of the report.
Representative Storwald, can you talk about how you got involved in this? Why is this issue of jail overcrowding something that you wanted to devote time to?
Well, when Representative Fry first started working on this, we've worked on a number of things together. I worked on the criminal code reform that was passed 4 or 5 years ago. So I knew this was an issue. And when Representative Fry first began to discuss it with me, I said, that's perfect. Let's do exactly what you intend to do.
And so this is such a huge problem right now, but it's also a very complicated problem. Like, how did you kind of come to tackle it, and how did you even know where to start?
Well, that's a great question. It's hard to know where to start. This issue has been around for a long, long time. Back when we were doing the sentencing reform, we realized there were a number of jails at that point in time that were at peak population. So I think this is just a dovetail. It's deeply important that we understand the root causes of all these things. And there are a great number of those reasons why, as we found out.
Yeah, and as part of that process, you spent a lot of time talking with people. You spent time in jails. What did you hear? What were some of the biggest problems that really needed addressing?
Well, there are a number of things. One is that I found this out in another committee I was on, actually, but there's a report that we've had an increased pretrial detention just in the last 3 years of around 70% here in Indiana. It's countrywide, but especially here in Indiana. So we're trying to figure out exactly what the cause of that is, and that's just as complicated as the jail overcrowding population issue is, too. But that's one of the things that we're trying to take a deep dive in to understand exactly why that increase and why now.
Representative Fry.
Yes, Representative Storwald is correct. It is a difficult subject to study. One of the things we found out is we didn't have real-time data. We really don't know exactly who is in each jail from the state level. Why are they there? How long they've been there? and the results of their case. So currently I'm working on legislation this year that will see to it that we have that data going forward, which will then further assist us in coming to the root causes of jail overcrowding.
Justice David, you were on the chair, or you are the chair, were the chair of the Jail Overcrowding Task Force. What stood out to you about the process, learning and hearing from so many people about this problem?
Well, I think the effort was nothing short of amazing and probably unprecedented in the United States, where the legislature recognized the challenges of the local community, the sheriff, the county council, everyone on that local community side, and how it affects positively or negatively those decisions, the state, be it the Department of Corrections or the policymakers. And to be able to put together the task force with executive branch representation, with representation from the legislature and a number of other executive agencies and even those that aren't directly involved in the criminal justice system, but certainly the prosecutors, defense counsel, Department of Corrections, and the Sheriff's Association representatives. Again, it's nothing short of unprecedented, and it was a very difficult 148 days, six meetings, but the efforts of the task force were extraordinary and have produced a report that gives the policymakers some suggestions, a potential roadmap so that they can take the second, third level and make those second, third level decisions that they would like to make going forward to really appreciate the challenge but yet appreciate the opportunities to do good on the county level and on the state level.
All right. Slow pitch question here. I know the answer, but I want to hear your response. Is there one central problem that seems to be responsible for the overcrowding?
I think there are a number of central problems. The representative alluded to the data and evaluation, knowing who's in jail for what purpose. It's nobody's fault, mm-hmm. But how can we improve it? And I think that's one of the big takeaways from this undertaking is this was not a pointing the finger. This was how can we improve the process? How can we give the tools to the policymakers, be they in the executive agency or the legislature, to make real strides in solving this problem? So I would say data, to get the data so that you know what you have, so that you know what you want to do about it, but you have to have the data. I think if I could offer a second, and there are several, is that at places there's just a fundamental lack of treatment options, and that imposes tremendous burdens on the local sheriff, local jails, if you have somebody in that jail that jail's not really suited to take care of. Mm. So I think the discussion has prompted a number of ideas being floated around, and hopefully this process will go forward and there'll be some real solutions.
Representative Frye, it points to the complication that we're dealing with. And let's kind of get to the basics of the task force. I think a lot of people might not know exactly what role a task force has. Can you explain what the goal is?
Yes, the goal was to talk to all those involved, whether it be a county sheriff or a judge or a prosecutor, a public defender, and identify in different regions of the state, by the way, what their challenges were. And I think it's interesting to note that each time we found different problems in different areas. Justice David was referring to what he believed maybe the biggest issue or one issue. For me, it was inconsistency. We have some counties doing fantastic work and other counties aren't addressing any of those issues at all, yet they may be doing fantastic work with a drug addiction or something like that. So for me, we had to get the data to find out what's really going on out there. And secondly, then we have to find out what coordination or what policy we can create that will help begin to alleviate the problem. And frankly, I don't believe a larger jail is the answer.
And I want to illustrate just how bad the problem is. Obviously we formed a task force to address it, so it's a big deal. How bad is the overcrowding problem right now in Indiana?
Well, I think a vast majority of our jails are at capacity or over. Not all. I have some jails in my community that are not. But I think it is a serious problem and one that's got to be addressed.
And has it, in recent years, I guess, gotten worse, kind of leading us to where we are now with the need for this task force? Or has it just, Representative Storwald, has it been bad for a while?
I think it's been bad for a while, but I think it's gotten worse. And there are so many complicating factors, as you alluded to earlier. And to touch on what Justice David mentioned, now we have a shift in population from predominantly a male population in jails to a much greater increase in female population. The addiction issues that jails have to deal with now is very difficult for them to handle on an ongoing basis. So we're trying to provide them a means to do that. Just some of those issues that not only overcrowding, but within the population, what does that mean? Because when you increase the female population, obviously you have to have sight and sound separation and those things. So it makes it more difficult within the brick and mortar of the building what you have to do within the jail.
Hmm. Do we know exactly how many jails are overcrowded in Indiana? And how do we even define that term? When is a jail considered overcrowded?
Well, there are approximately 40 who are at population or close. So that's, in general terms, we're around 40. A number of those, probably more than, I think more than half of our jails in Indiana are older than 30 years.
Mm.
So, but that's just about where we are.
So 40 of how many total?
92.
So around half, just a little under half of
little less than half.
And is when we're talking about like location, are these counties with large populations, or are there exceptions to that?
It's all over the board. Mm. We have smaller counties that have an overcrowding issue. We have smaller counties that don't. Same with cities and intermediate-sized counties. It's all over the board. What we found was how some counties address those issues are very innovative and have done a very good job at dealing with their population.
Representative Greg Storwald is on the Jail Overcrowding Task Force. We have a lot more to talk about. We'll keep talking with our guests after the break, which also includes Stephen David, Indiana Supreme Court Justice and Chair of the Task Force, and State Representative Randy Fry, who created the task force. As always, we'll take your questions and comments on social media. How do you think jail overcrowding should be addressed? Have you seen it have an effect on your community or anyone that you know? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, and you can leave us a voicemail as well. Just include your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to our conversation on jail overcrowding in Indiana, I want to mention our last show. We talked yesterday about the death penalty, how the policies and opinions around it have changed in our state and the rest of the country. You can find that show and all our shows wherever you get podcasts. Today, we're talking about overcrowded jails. As always, we'd love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or send us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. In the studio, we're joined again by Indiana Supreme Court Justice Stephen David, also chair of the Jail Overcrowding Task Force, and Indiana State Representatives Greg Storwald, who is on the task force, and Randy Fry, who created the task force. And we're welcoming a new voice. Brett Clark is the sheriff of Hendricks County, just west of Indianapolis. Thanks for coming in, Sheriff.
Thank you.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana, or ACLU, has filed multiple lawsuits about jail overcrowding in the last few years, and they wrote up a summary of the issue on their website. I want to read some of that. The ACLU says, across Indiana, inmates are being subjected to overcrowded jail cells and inhumane living conditions. Many are forced to sleep on cell floors, exposed to extremely dirty conditions with insects and black mold. Even worse, when prisons and jails are over capacity, the needs of prisoners with medical and mental health needs are also often overlooked and unmet. The ACLU of Indiana has filed overcrowding lawsuits in several county jails over the past decade. The hazardous conditions in these jails result in the denial of basic human needs and constitute violations of the U.S. Constitution's protections against cruel and unusual punishment. With the alarming pattern of jail overcrowding throughout the state, we must push for policies that aim to reduce jail populations whenever possible and reduce the need for the additional cells. They go on to say the two most recent ACLU Indiana overcrowding lawsuits were filed in February of last year against Gibson County Jail and Henry County Jail. Henry County Jail added multiple triple bunk beds to cells without appropriate approval, cramming four people into a two-person cell. The overcrowding crisis in Gibson County Jail resulted in people sleeping on cell floors, leading to increased tensions and fighting among prisoners. First, Sheriff, I'm curious what your reaction is to this description of what's going on in jails right now. Does it seem typical?
Absolutely not. I don't think it's typical at all. I think those are probably more the exception than the rule. But the thing to remember about the sheriffs, and we have a lot of great ones in this state, is that they don't have the ability to put up a no vacancy sign. So we are left to deal with what we get, and sometimes that is behind. But I think that the work that we're trying to do here is to address these very needs. And for the most part, those kinds of issues are rare. And sometimes those lawsuits and things like that that draw attention to these problems are welcomed by the sheriffs, so we can work together and collectively with the community to try to make it better. Because believe me, none of the sheriffs that are in those lawsuits or in those situations that are less than ideal want to be in them. It's not only not safe for the inmates, it's not safe for the staff or the community.
Can someone explain the nature of these lawsuits from the ACLU? They've sued the jails themselves, but what fault do the actual jails themselves have in this? Anyone want to take that?
I must refrain from,
of course,
any comments.
Of course, Justice.
I mean, we can talk about the report, and the mission that we were tasked with was to conduct a statewide review, study the issue of how to reduce recidivism for convicted felons in the county, for anybody serving time in the jail, investigate research programs, best practices, and submit the report. We submitted that report, and everybody on that task force, public defenders, prosecutors, sheriffs, legislators, everyone recommended that the General Assembly enact legislation to incorporate this evidence-based decision-making policy team reform initiative that's been undertaken several years ago and the various work groups under that into the Justice Reinvestment Advisory Council to give it some permanency so that there's a central location or central group of people dedicated and adequately staffed that so they can deal with and become the credible organization to go to for best practices, identifying the data, further defining the population in the jails at post-trials, at pre-trial, to really get down to answer the question. It's complex, but we're not satisfied with it's complex. How do we solve it? And you solve it by breaking it down into its various subparts. And so I think the more success the results of this task force work is, then you'll have fewer and fewer circumstances where there's a need for a lawsuit perceived by one or more people alleged to be aggrieved.
Sheriff Brett Clark, isn't there a degree, though, of control in the way people running some of these jails address the issue?
Yeah, certainly. Everybody has their different styles, and the sheriff is constitutionally charged with effectively running his or her jail. So a lot of that is local leadership, and that's the thing that's so complex about this problem. Jails have evolved over the years, and what is expected of us as jail operators has really changed. I mean, we used to be sort of a one-stop shop, very short pretrial time until a person went to trial, but we have kind of evolved into, you know, the de facto mental health system. We have a lot of expectations of treatment models and class performance and hooking people up with services and these kinds of things. And all these are to a good end, right? Because obviously we want to reduce recidivism. But a lot of the jails, especially as someone mentioned earlier, are very old. We're not built with these kinds of modern programs in mind. So we're in a bit of a catch-up mode trying to keep up with what modern society is giving us. And I think, again, for the most part, everyone's doing a really good job, but it's the kind of collaboration and things like this exact effort that is going to be required for us to do this good work.
I should mention the ACLU does say what they think the two main causes behind overcrowding are, and I don't know how it relates to the results of the task force and the report, but they say that the number of admissions and the length of time a person is incarcerated are among the issues. They call for reducing both. What could make a difference on those fronts, Sheriff?
Well, it's a lot of factors in that. It could be prosecutorial style. It's, you know, the various judicial courts and how they look at things. What is the society willing to accept? I mean, there's a lot of prongs trying to approach this program. It's easy, I think, for someone to say, well, it's all because of legislative change, or it's all because of crime trends, or it's all because of growth. And every one of those answers would be right to some degree, but it's too easy to just to say it's only the fault of one of those. So I think the answer then lies in, again, just working together and trying to focus on what some of those causes are, which is not at all easy.
Representative Storwald, you were on the task force and which put out the report late last year. Do those two problems that the ACLU cites, did that make it among the problems that were addressed in the report that came from the task force?
Yes, I think that's some of the issues that we're dealing with. And one of the things that we're trying to do going forward is to have a proper risk assessment for people who are arrested, whether or not they'd be eligible for bond, a lower bond, or released on their own recognizance. And with these evidence-based decision-making, which is a foundation of the risk assessment, gives the court, the prosecutors, probation, everybody a basis upon which to make a decision. You have to have that balance because you can't make it just simply because you have money to get out, because we have some fairly violent people who may or may not or should not be eligible for a lower bond, and they need to be assessed too. You couple that with the fact that you have people who may not have the money to make bond, and then they may be low risk and a nonviolent offender. So you have to, in my opinion, have to have a risk assessment tool who will flush out both those ends of the spectrum so everybody involved in the criminal justice system can make an informed decision.
We have a voicemail from a listener. Again, you can call us at 866-476-3881 to leave us a voicemail. Here's one from Sam with her thoughts.
Hi, this is Sam calling from Indianapolis, and I'm just curious why we still need a task force to determine how this overcrowding of jails problem happens when we know it's from over-policing of neighborhoods of color and also bail being set and people being unable to pay to get out.
Representative Fry, as we've noted, the problem is complicated, but I understand Sam's concerns. Is that among the issues?
I think it is, especially bail. And so this year, going forward, in the bill that I've authored and Representative Storwald has co-authored, we're hoping to create a pilot program which would apply public defender services to someone who cannot afford an attorney at their initial hearing. And so we wonder if someone does not have the means to afford an attorney, whether their possibility of bail will be less. And so we want to find out by providing them with an attorney at their initial hearing to see if that changes. If it does, then we'll come back in another year and try to apply it statewide.
Representative Storwald, I want to come back to nonviolent offenders you mentioned a second ago. Some people have put the blame on legislation passed a couple of years ago that requires certain nonviolent offenders to be housed in county lockups instead of state facilities. Can you explain what this bill was and what the intent was behind it?
Well, I think you're talking about the sentencing reform. And when we talked about low-level nonviolent offenders, the hope and desire was to keep them locally and provide services for them at the local level. When the sentencing reform was initially started back in 2010, we had a prison overpopulation issue, and it was growing exponentially. And we wanted philosophically to deal with these people, nonviolent offenders, in the local community by providing them services to deal with mental health and addiction services. We did that in that bill. We established a program called Recovery Works, and it's a grant program that counties, it's voluntary. They don't have to do it, but they can apply for the grant, And then they have a provider within the community who is licensed through FSSA to provide these addiction services. And to date, we've had about 48,000 people go through Recovery Works. I will say that the report from last year from Dr. Ray here at IUPUI, I know he's moved on to another location, but he did the report for us. And it's a two-year study, and I know you should have 3 years on a proper recidivism study, but in 2 years, on the high-risk population, the recidivism rate is down to 14-point-some percent. So we have had a lot of success with the counties who have established these programs, established drug courts, and have focused on the demand side of the drug issue and not just the supply side. But we've had some very good success with that program with the counties who have established it and adopted it.
Sheriff Brett Clark, I think what's important to kind of reiterate for people so that they can get a picture is just what an overcrowded jail looks like. What when you go to one, it's hard to identify a problem if all you know about it is that there's a task force involved. What does it look like at an overcrowded jail?
Well, typically the Indiana definition of overcapacity is greater than 80% of your beds full. In my case, we have 252 what you would call legal beds, I suppose, and today we have 260 people in our jail. Mm. What we've seen is a real increase in women, but those jails look like any other. But the problem is that you have classification issues. So imagine if you and your spouse are a foster family. And you live in a three-bedroom ranch, but you want to foster 11 kids. Well, you can't put the boys and girls together. You can't put a young person with an illness together with everybody else because he might make everyone sick. In our case, if persons have been involved in certain types of crime, we have a duty to protect them from the safety of the other folks who might want to hurt them because of what they've done. So it presents a real challenge, not only for, again, the inmates who are our customers, if you will, but also the staff in an effort to safely classify these persons and make sure that they're in the right rooms that they need to be in, if you will.
And so what happens when you do have more inmates than beds? Where do people go?
Well, when people say they sleep on the floor, most of the time that's in a portable bed type of system. It doesn't mean that they're sleeping on concretes with nothing else. A lot of times it's a portable, almost like a camping bed is about the best way I can describe it to a person who has never seen it. But it's a plastic bunk that's raised up off the floor with a mattress and a blanket. And that's how it works. So it's not a situation, I don't think, that painting the picture of just person sleeping on the floor like a sleepover at grandma's is really not accurate. There are beds and provisions and sheets and rather blankets and mattresses that at least allow some level of comfort. The problem is there are just too many people in here, so it makes it difficult, again, to classify and to get people moved around safely and do those kinds of things.
As sheriff, what can you do to mitigate some of these problems, and what indeed have you done in the past?
Well, there's a lot of creative things you can do. A lot of it is really just trying to help people move through the system quicker. So in our county, we have been a pilot program for the Recovery Works. So the effort there is to try to help people with their addictions and maybe some mental health issues by having folks come in from the outside that can offer counseling and services to them. That also gives them an opportunity to have a warm handoff when they leave so that way perhaps they go to get treatment and help that they need as opposed to staying in the jail. We also, as a result of the 2015 law, signed people up who've been in our facility more than 30 days for Medicaid or HIP services in Indiana. So that way, that barrier at least is not something that will slow them down from getting continuing services when they get out. But it's those kinds of things and working in concert with your judges and your prosecutor's office and your victim services people and your community and your behavioral health providers. And that's what that EBDM process, this evidence-based decision model that we have tried to pilot, has helped us do. It's getting all the right stakeholders to the table so that you can try to address these things instead of working in your silos, if you will, that we had kind of been stuck in before. And in our case, that has been a big help. We're a very fast-growing county, and for us, it's a challenge every day. So we regroup. We have good folks that we work closely together, and we communicate. And I think that's the whole key is to try to just take a holistic approach to this whole situation, because there isn't one magic bullet that's going to fix this. Building more beds is sometimes needed, but it isn't going to fix it. If you can take a look at the overall problem of what's driving these numbers in different counties, because they're all over the board, as the representative said, that's where you have to do it. And that was the purpose of this whole thing, I think, was to get everybody to the table to start addressing these things in a dedicated way, committed to a good outcome for the future.
Representative Fry, I want to make sure I ask this before you have to take off. In a recent report from our Bloomington affiliate, WFIU, Johnson County Sheriff Dwayne Burgess said he is seeing more inmates with mental health issues enter his jail. He also said, quote, jail shouldn't be a location where you put people with mental health issues. There needs to be other treatment centers where these folks can go, end quote. How much does this seem to be contributing to overcrowding issues?
I think it's certainly a contributing factor, and one that we're hoping to do more study and find out real quality solutions. One of the things that is easy to do when you get this report back is try to start to throw things together that will immediately start to make a positive impact. And we have to be careful with that. So throughout this summer, I hope to partner again with my colleagues here and others and try to come up with real solutions. But I think it's definitely a contributing factor and one we have to look at.
So this is an issue that we've heard about for a pretty long time now. And I know that you'll be kind of more thoughtfully looking at this and coming up with solutions. But given that you have spent so much time kind of looking at it already, what do you anticipate could be at least the first steps of figuring out how to solve it?
Well, I think it's important to note we just got this report in early December and session started in early January. So it's just almost impossible to put quality legislation together. Mm. With that being said, we will continue to have the conversation with those all in state government and the judiciary as well and our colleagues in law enforcement and try to come up with quality solutions. I just don't think it would be wise at this point to throw something at it because we really want to make sure we do it right and not just guess.
I want to thank all of you for your time today, Representative Fry, Representative Storwald, and Justice David. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be hanging on to Sheriff Brett Clark in the next segment, and we will continue to talk about jail overcrowding. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Back now to our discussion on jail overcrowding in Indiana. We're joined again by Hendricks County Sheriff Brett Clark. And now we welcome Doug Huntzinger from the governor's office. Doug is a member of the jail overcrowding task force that we've been talking about, and he's the incoming Indiana Executive Director for Drug Prevention, Treatment, and Enforcement. Thanks for coming in, Doug.
Thanks for having me.
And Bernice Corley is with us. She is the Executive Director of the Indiana Public Defender Council. Thank you, Bernice, for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get going, as always, we would love to hear your questions and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail along with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Bernice, we'll start with you. Can you explain what you do at the Indiana Public Defender Council and how your work interacts with this issue?
Yes. The Public Defender Council is a state agency. We provide support and training to public defenders as well as litigation support. Additionally, we also are charged by our enacting statute to engage in improving the criminal justice system. And so that's how we intersect with this issue.
So how'd you get involved in the task force?
I'm one of the statutory identified positions.
Doug Huntzinger, I understand you're in sort of a transitional period right now. You've been the Deputy Director for Drug Prevention, Treatment, and Enforcement since 2017, and you'll start your new position as Executive Director tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yes.
Friday's a good day to start a new job.
Apparently so.
I've been asking everybody this, so I'll throw it to you too. How did you get involved in the task force? Does jail overcrowding impact your work?
It does. So our office oversees the response to specifically the opioid epidemic, but also the drug epidemic in total. And we know that over 80% of those in jails and in our correctional system have diagnosable substance use disorder. And so one of the ways to reduce recidivism rather easily is to start getting at the root causes that are leading people to end up in jail.
Mm. Sheriff Brett Clark, can you explain how county jails are run? What control do you have there as sheriff? Maybe kind of give us a basic rundown.
Well, the county jails, again, the sheriff is the constitutionally elected officer who's charged with one of his duties is to run that county jail. So our funding source is the county. The budgetary arm of county government is the county council. That's the fiscal body. Then the executive body of the county government are the three commissioners. So in our case, we have a great working relationship with all of those, but it's kind of a teamwork approach. I am basically the overseer or the CEO of the entity that is our jail, but that is via a budget that's funded by the county council and cars and employees and building issues and those type of things that are dealt with by our commissioners. So I feel like we have good ones in place there. We have a great working relationship. I don't think every county can say that, unfortunately, but we're very blessed. So that is kind of the role there. And then we also run, of course, the police operation in the unincorporated areas of the county.
What kind of an effect does overcrowding have in the jail itself, Sheriff? Can you describe what kinds of issues crop up when there are too many people for the space?
Yeah, again, it's just the biggest challenge we have is the staff in the jail just each morning trying to properly classify people and put them in a place that is safe for them. Again, our job in the jail is not any kind of a punishment or anything like that at this point. For us is to make sure that these folks coming through our system have a safe stay in it, have an efficient trip through it, and to get the needs met that they have coming in. Now, again, that doesn't mean that we are now some kind of an advanced medical place. Because we're not. But we certainly don't want folks coming in to deteriorate or get worse. We just want them to have, again, a safe, efficient, protected ride, if you will, through our system and then get on their way to the next step. And hopefully that is, you know, through reformation and recovery and treatment or whatever it is that they might need so they don't reoffend and come back.
What about reports that overcrowding increases violence and fighting? Have you seen that with regard to your own facility?
Sure. On occasion, I mean, the folks in there are humans just like we are. And imagine yourself, if you're in a crowded bus station and it's a hot day and you're already frustrated and it's a holiday season, those type of things. I mean, think about the pictures we see of everyday people on Black Friday or, you know, during those kind of days at the shopping malls. It's no different for folks in our jail or our staff. So when you put too many people in a facility that's not built for them, it makes tensions rise. So it's incumbent upon the jail staff, which begins with the sheriff as the leader, like we mentioned earlier, to have good practice in there and be patient and be tolerant and, you know, try to get folks to get along. Because if you treat them with respect and you run a professional operation that is clean and well kept, you will have less of that. I think the problems like that come up when you do get too many numbers. And again, we don't have the luxury of putting up a no vacancy sign, but the sheriffs are many, many good ones doing a lot of innovative things trying to keep those spaces clean and as safe as they can. But when you have, you know, some of our rural counties with very limited services and maybe 60 beds but 150 inmates, it is a real challenge.
Doug Hunsinger, I want to come back. You mentioned root causes. What would be some of those root causes?
Well, so obviously addiction is one of the largest root causes, but there are many, many others. And what we also do is in the system, we put up other obstacles as well. So so for example, if you were to if one of the sheriff's guys picks up someone who has an addiction issue and was stealing. You know, we charge them with a felony. Now you've got a felony record. So when you are released, it's harder to get a job. We've, you know, there's a possibility maybe you didn't pay your child support and we then suspend your license. Now it's we've put another barrier in place. So one of the things that we focused on is that exit from the system. How do we help ensure that we're getting people the services and paying attention to the needs that will really help them keep from coming back into jail?
Get them out, keep them out.
Yes.
That sort of thing. And so what did you, I guess, take away from your experience on this task force? What did you hear from people as you went around that kind of stuck with you?
Yeah, I think the biggest eye-opening thing for me was that this is a large system, right? It involves prosecutors, public defenders, judges, community corrections, and they all have to work together. And when they work together, we see counties that that aren't overcrowded, that have systems that are doing really great things. But when the system starts breaking down and there isn't as much cooperation is when we really start to see that overcrowding. And so in places where you have some of the largest overcrowding, you also have the largest systems failure.
Bernice Corley, same question for you. What did you hear when you went around on the task force?
have to echo Doug. I totally agree. It was really amazing to see how counties were able to use their discretion to solve local issues or not to solve them. And that was really powerful. And for me, it's something I've felt for a while. I've always been sort of concerned about, you know, Indiana is a home rule state, and ordinarily that's just fine. But in the criminal justice arena, I don't think it's helpful. And it's great that we do have some counties that learn how to work together and cooperate for good outcomes, but often we don't. And the state is harmed entirely by those county or local failings.
So do you feel closer to understanding how to solve this problem on the scale that it needs to be solved after going through the task force? Because as I understand it, it just sort of shined a light on just how complicated it really is.
Not to sound like Jay-Z, but there's 92 counties and they all have their own different problems.
Right.
I mean, definitely I respect more that they're complicated, but I do think they're approachable, and I do think there are solutions.
When you look at the solutions for this, what are the biggest obstacles, I guess, standing in the way of getting them done?
Sure. Well, I think counties are resourced so differently, and there's so many counties that have serious lack. So, for example, we can focus on pretrial detention. That is a huge problem. And we've really been trying to tackle it at the state level. Even if we did away with all of the pretrial detention, we'd still have overcrowded jails. So as I look at some of the tools that could address pretrial detention issues, et cetera, there needs to be a strong public defender system. And a lot of counties don't have that. There are a lot of people who sit in jail for long periods of time waiting for bail reviews because they have not been appointed someone to help them, or there's not enough space on the docket to get them in. So there are people whose lives are being devastated, though they're presumed innocent, and though they have a family and maybe jobs to get to, that they're losing because they're sitting in jail.
We're talking about jail overcrowding and the Jail Overcrowding Task Force, which released a report late last year, with Bernice Corley, Executive Director of the Indiana Public Defender Council, also Doug Hunsinger, incoming Executive Director for Drug Prevention, Treatment, and Enforcement, who is on the task force as well, and Brett Clark, who is the Hendricks County Sheriff. And we would like for you to jump in. This is you can jump into the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. You can find us at All In Indiana, or you can leave a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881, and we'll get it to our panel in the next 5 minutes that we have remaining. Sheriff Brett Clark, is there one particular solution to this problem that people tend to bring up? I know that there's not one solution to this problem, but from people on the outside, what do they say could be the issue more than anything else?
My takeaway in that regard is not necessarily from the public perception, because sometimes that is not right. And I think folks should take the opportunity to go tour their jails in their particular areas because they pay for them.
Right.
But I think one of the biggest factors that could help the entire system is to get this data piece right. And I think statewide, everywhere we went, from big sheriffs in larger counties to smaller, very rural counties who have almost no resources, data was the number one thing, and that would allow us then to cooperate better with the governor's office and with the legislators and with the other folks who are at the table to be able to pull up in real time, as Representative Fry said earlier, some of that data. Who's in jail? Where are they in jail? Why are they in jail? What is driving those kinds of things? And some of that is statewide, and some of it's going to have to be dealt with at the local level. But I think if we had the ability to pull up some kind of a computer system and get all these disparate systems talking, the courts, the probation, we're all on different data systems, it would solve a lot of the problems, because then the legislatures could look in real time in the session at real live data. Right now, about the best way we have to do it is send out a survey to the sheriffs who are on approximately 19 different jail record management systems, wait for their responses, and then the jail data is stale. A jail is not a 8-to-4 Monday through Friday operation. It closes never. So all the time, 24 hours a day, people come in and people go out. So I can tell you right now there's 260 people in my jail. In 3 hours from now, there might be 270, or there might be back down to 235. So it's almost impossible to say some kind of an average. But if you could have real time for the legislators and the judges and the Supreme Court folks and everybody to be on the same page, I think it would give them a better idea of where some of these folks are sitting and let us deal with them so we're not always kind of behind the eight ball.
Sheriff, Jenny on Twitter has a question for you. And you mentioned earlier that more women are coming into your jail. What are all these women in jail charged with, she's asking? Are there patterns that you've noticed there?
Absolutely. I think if I could scale that down to one word for you, women, men, drugs.
Drugs.
Period. That's it. That drives the thefts. It drives the probation violations. It drives a lot of the – and that could be considered a disease or an epidemic, however you want to classify that. But if we could fix that – and I know that's pie in the sky, not realistic. But if we could make a dent in it even, it would make such a tremendous change in the people who are sitting in jail, because most of them fail because of some drug issue or an addiction and to some degree, again, as Doug said, mental illness or co-occurring disorder with mental illness folks who are trying to treat themselves with some kind of a drug or alcohol or something like that.
Doug Huntzinger, that brings me to you. I mean, your first day on the job is tomorrow, but you've been dealing with this for quite some time as the deputy director for drug prevention, treatment, and enforcement. Are there plans, big plans, to really kind of tackle your, I guess, portion of this?
Yeah. So over the last 3 years, we've worked really hard to build out treatment capacity, starting with we received a waiver from the Centers for Medicaid, Medicare in D.C. for us to pay for substance use disorder treatment among the Medicaid population. And so we've had 65,000 individuals receive treatment via that waiver in the last 2 years, and we've also worked really hard to expand our treatment capacity, and I think we've I think we're at about 40% increase in the number of addiction beds that are available. So we work really hard. Recovery Works is another program that is gap funding that allows for people with felonies who are exiting the criminal justice system to apply that money for recovery housing or for treatment. So we've got a lot of work to do in the criminal justice space. But really a lot of the work that we have been doing for the last 3 years really ties really well into this.
Sam from Facebook says, like the ACLU said, the issue is how many people are being put in jail and how long they're kept there. So the answers lie in putting less people in jail and allowing easier access to being let out of jail before your trial. I don't think it's been mentioned in this report, the percentage of the people in jail who have yet to even be convicted, he goes on to say. I'd like to hear that statistic. Bernice, I'm not sure you have the statistic, but you were kind of reacting to that as I read it.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. The Indiana Criminal Justice Institute is charged every year with doing an analysis that does contain that statistic. But there was a jail survey, I want to say, a couple of years ago, and the statistic I want to say was 56%. Or 9,000 people were in jail pre-trial, meaning they have not been convicted of anything.
Sorry, I think that 9,000 number, from what we heard from one of the testimonies, was the number of people who had received the maximum amount of their sentence in pretrial. You can probably better explain that than I.
Yes. So you're complementing with additional data. So in addition to the percentage of people who are held pretrial, some people are held so long, 9,000, that they have ultimately received a sentence that's shorter than the credit time they had, if that makes sense. They were in jail longer than a sentence was required of them, which is astonishing and disgusting.
Wow.
So it is a real problem, and I totally agree. I think to back up, in addition agreeing with what the person just said, is we're asking a great deal of the criminal justice system. I think we're asking of the criminal justice system things that we should not. There are a lot of people who, as the sheriff have said, really suffer from mental health illness and conditions, and we really should be building up a response that is separate from the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. That would go a long way to help, along with addiction as well.
I want to thank all of you so much for your time today. Bernice Corley, Executive Director of the Indiana Public Defender Council, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Doug Hunsinger, incoming executive director for drug prevention, treatment, and enforcement, who is also on the jail overcrowding task force. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Sheriff Brett Clark of Hendricks County, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, sir.
And our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it wherever you get your podcast. Today's show will be posted later this afternoon. And join us tomorrow for the Friday Pitch-In, where we'll kick off the weekend recapping some of the biggest Indiana headlines of the week in the first segment. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. Of course, I'm Matt Pelser. Thank you so much for listening. This is All In.